As Verna said, we have been following stories of Jesus' life throughout Lent and Easter, specifically stories that center Simon Peter, or at least in which he's a major character, and we're kind of seeing these particular stories of Jesus' ministry through Simon Peter's eyes. And so today is the last Sunday of that series in which we're focusing on that. It was kind of amazing that last Sunday, when Dr. Huxman was here from EMU as our guest preacher, we had those plans long before we'd even decided our Lent theme, and she said, well, I'll send you the text that I'll preach on, you know, a week or two ahead. And she chose a passage that was a Peter story from Acts, which was really amazing, just kind of serendipitous. So I'll be referring back to that story again, but it just ended up kind of being a neat way that those wove together. This morning's passage in John it's the last chapter of the book of John, and it's almost too good to be true as far as the number of callbacks in these verses to all the stories that we've read. Some of the commentators say that they think actually probably this is more like an epilogue chapter, that maybe writers in the larger Johannine community may have written this to sort of tie up the book of John, because as I was reading them, I was like, how are they like referencing all of the stories? And I think it was the work of someone, you know, kind of tying things together to help people who were following this particular gospel see these threads throughout. Like, for example, this story begins with Peter in a boat going fishing, which was actually the way we encountered Simon Peter in the first story in this series. And also, just like that story, this professional fisherman is out there for the night catching no fish, which seems a little bit odd. And again, Jesus says, cast your net on the other side. And again, after no luck fishing all night, Simon Peter and the disciples who are with him catch just a crazy amount of fish. Now, this time it says the nets don't break. There's only one boat, I think, but just a very, very similar story to that call narrative of Simon Peter and Jesus. There's also an interesting repetition of threes throughout these Peter stories, and we get to see that in this story as well. Like, for example, on the night before Jesus was taken to trial, he warned Peter. He said, you're going to deny me three times. And sure enough, Peter does that. In the story that that Dr. Huxman preached on last Sunday, a story that takes place after the one this morning, Peter is shown a vision of a way of believing and behaving that was so surprising to him. It was where this curtain comes down and there are all these animals, ones that are, you know, traditionally seen as unclean, along with clean animals. And it was such a bizarre vision to him that he had to be shown the vision, of course, three times until he believed it. And it ended up being a very foundational vision because Simon Peter was very big on preaching a message and an understanding of Jesus that said, this message and this way of being community together is for all people. It's for Jews and Gentiles. And so that ended up being a really foundational story. And the part of this morning's story about the catch of fish is in some ways maybe a precursor to that story that we heard about last week but actually happens later. In this sort of bizarre detail about 153 kinds of fish. And there are lots of different interesting commentator things about what the 153 is. But what we do know is that that's more kinds of fish than there were in that body of water. So I think the emphasis is like, no, really, this is larger than anything you can imagine, the folks that God wants to gather in that catch of fish. So. But what I really want to focus on this morning comes out of this third set of threes that we see in today's story, where Jesus asks Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Simon replied, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." Jesus asked a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Simon replied, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you." Jesus said to him, "Take care of my sheep." He asked a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was sad that Jesus had asked him a third time, "Do you love me?" He replied, "Lord, you know everything. You know I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." So there are interesting nuances in this back and forth and back and forth and back and forth between Jesus and Peter. In the first and second questions, Jesus uses a form of the Greek word agape, which I think many people have heard about this idea, but it's kind of the all-encompassing love of God, by which I mean love that emulates God's love and flows from compassion and intention. And the third question, Jesus uses a different word for love, philia, which is a love more based in preference and commonality and sort of affinity. Not just I love you because it's the noble thing to do, but I like you, we have a connection. And the commentaries that I read actually cautioned on putting too much weight on the differences in the words here and how love is translated. But if anything, they noted that it's an interesting progression, because you would think the way agape is lifted up in the Gospels that it would be this progression from filio to agape, but it's actually the other way around. Instead of leading with it, you end with this filio love. And I've certainly always been taught that agape is sort of the better, nobler love that we're all aiming to actually live out of. And it's an incredibly important kind of love, because as I've quoted here a number of times over the years, because to me it's been such a formative article, but anti-racist scholar and activist Dr. Regina Shands, who is also a Black Mennonite, wrote a reflection that she shared in, I think it was the Mennonite at the time, about what she hopes for her children in light of Trayvon Martin and other, especially issues around safety and policing, that she's not interested in waiting for justice that's rooted in love. She's concerned about the surviving and thriving of her children, and no matter whether that comes out of love for them or no matter what kind of love that is, she just cautions us against that, against waiting for a love that sort of arises out of connection. And so I think, it's just interesting to think about those two different kinds, but also sort of a caution about relying on which kind of love we're operating out of, and that people need to be protected, and we need to operate out of justice no matter what kind of love we're motivated by. We can't just sit around and wait till we feel the right things to act with justice. But this progression here in Jesus' questions to Peter, the fact that it's going from agape to filio, I think could be interpreted as showing that Jesus desired to be loved, not just out of pious devotion, not just because it's the right thing, but as he hints in the stories of the Last Supper as well, Jesus wished to be loved and remembered and known and connected, not just sort of followed by his disciples because it was the right thing to do as well. So both of these kinds of love are important and good. What's interesting in each of these three questions, though, is where each question lands. And each of those doesn't end with Peter replying, "Yes, I love you." Jesus is saying, okay, if you love me, then feed them. If you love me, take care of them. Which I think is interesting, that the point of devotion, which Jesus is saying over and over and over to Peter, literally three times, is that the end point, the goal of loving me is care. It's feeding and caring for others, for one another. That the flourishing and nourishing of those within your purview is the purpose for the love. So what feeding looks like is kind of interesting in this story as well. In this story, unlike the first time where we have Jesus instructing the professional fisherman about how to do his job, in this story, Jesus isn't in the boat with them. Jesus is on the shore the whole time, and Peter and the disciples are in the boat. And when he asks them how their fishing is going, he asks them if they've caught anything to eat. Not to sell, but if they've caught anything to eat. Again, this story is about nourishing and feeding. And when they come in tired from fishing all night and dragging a net full almost to the breaking, Jesus has a meal there waiting for them. I use the language prepared a table for them. Okay, it doesn't say he prepared a table for them, but they're coming in from work and he has this meal for them. A warm fire with fish and bread and breakfast ready to eat. And again, this picture of the warm fire, there was a fire there in the stories of Peter's denials as well. He was having these conversations around fires. So the author of this story is really asking us to see all these as connected to each other. And that Peter's story doesn't end with these denials, but with a chance to declare love and be pointed toward care. And I think it's sweet, too, that that the meal prepared for them, they didn't even have to provide the fish for it, even though they were out there doing their job and getting a big fish, getting a large catch. But this was fish that was waiting for them, already prepared. And again, the language is very Eucharistic here. Jesus says to them, "Come and have breakfast." Then he came, took the bread, and gave it to them. And he did the same with the fish. So very communion-like here. And all of this feeding and nourishing makes me think of the kiddos and the first grade Bibles that we just gave out and the communion that we'll be sharing this morning. It just feels like a perfect day for us to be thinking, what does it mean to feed our lambs? To feed our sheep here, to take care of our sheep, of us. When a shepherd is feeding sheep, I'm guessing it's not usually a prepared meal like the one that Jesus prepared for his disciples. A shepherd feeds his sheep, feeds their sheep, by leading them to green pastures, making sure there's a space for the flock to graze that is relatively safe from predators. And lambs are fed by their mothers, so to feed the sheep is to feed the lambs. Granted, they begin nibbling pretty soon, and in about a month, they're out there grazing themselves. But there's a real interconnectedness here, like to the way to feed lambs is not only to make sure they have food, but the way to make sure they have food is to feed the mothers, the ewes. And Jesus, though, does more than just sort of provide pasture, provide the opportunity for a meal. As I was thinking about it, what would be sort of like the human equivalent to like saying, hey, you can go out to pasture, like is it like a buffet? Or it's almost like sort of giving somebody a box from IKEA and saying, you know, here's your couch when, you know, there's many, many steps between you and what you're about to receive. And that's not what Jesus does in this story. For his disciples, he doesn't give them an IKEA meal. He prepares a meal, and it's warm and ready for them to come. So we have both of these ways of feeding kind of in the story, the provision of the open pasture and the provision of a meal. And I think maybe it's helpful for us to have both of those images too. And maybe we need the prepared meal even more when we are in the position of feeding others. And thinking about seeing our families up here and parents and kids, how are we helping our families nourish their kids here? I'm a parent here too, and I think about that a lot. Like, how is what's said here in this space? How does it nourish us to nourish our kids? How does it nourish our kids directly? Part of me is very drawn to this idea of we nourish our kids by providing an open place for them to learn how to find, and for them to find things that we might not have noticed. I think for people who grew up being very much spoon-fed what food is, that image of the open pasture is very appealing as a way of thinking about providing nutrition. But then sometimes you just need a meal that somebody else made. The example that comes to mind for me very clearly is it's from this place and these people. Pastoral team brought Leslie and I each a meal during Holy Week, which is always kind of a heavy week for pastors, but falling so shortly after the death of Ashton Clatterbuck, it was just a really, really heavy time for us. And both Leslie and I felt a little guilty receiving a gift from busy people like that. But it was so meaningful to be nourished by someone else in a week when I was grieving and when I had a lot of nourishing to do in the form of pastoral care and trying to come up with a meaning, making meaning for sermons and services and things like that. There was just something very meaningful about having a meal provided. So thinking about the communion meal that we're having here today and the crackers for our kids and the Bibles, again, I think this morning is an important invitation for us to think about those different kinds of nourishing and how we're providing that for our kids and for all of us as we try to nourish our kids, whether they're our children or, as we say here, I mean, this is a village here too. These kids are our kids, and we say that when we have parent-child dedications. Like, we're here to support each other as whoever's raising the kids, we are here to support. And I know that parents here are having those conversations with one another. One of the reasons we're so grateful to have the Grant Street building is that we have another space on Sunday mornings for adult Christian ed. So we've been having conversations where parents of younger kids can gather and reflect on these things together. But how do we teach the love of God and commitment to the nourishing and flourishing of others? And these are conversations that are, I think, as a parent, I would have to say, like, I really yearn to hear how folks have done it before me, or even how folks who don't have sort of the nearsightedness of having their own kids right now, what observations are they making, you know? What wisdom is there beyond just the parents who have kids my age about how we're doing this together? And so finding ways to cross-pollinate that wisdom in our community feels very important. And this is just a very small thing, but I would invite, if you are connected to the CMCL Facebook page, I want to start a little bit of a conversation there, just because that is, in theory, a place where there can be an intergenerational conversation that's not just limited to the time of being here on Sunday. But these are things that we're thinking about all the time, and so grateful for Meredith, for our Children and Youth Committee, for Amanda, all the volunteers that work with you in Children and Youth. But I think we're at a moment where I think it's not like the moment presented itself out of nowhere. These are questions that we always have. But I think as we're building back together community after having been more dispersed for a period of time, and having kids who were really lived through years of challenge from being separated in the pandemic, and sort of living with parents who've had some trauma for all that too, as we're coming back together and continuing to build that with the support of wonderful teachers here, it's not just the job of our teachers. It feels like an opportunity to invite us to think together as a whole congregation about, you know, how we're supporting our kids and our parents in this particular moment in time in history. So this is not a sermon where I land on answers here. This is a sermon where we say, these are two interesting models that the scripture and the story tells us that I think really can fit our time. And what are the invitations they can give us to think together about how we continue to offer sort of the freedom of the green pasture, and also how do we provide the nourishment of meals to one another as we need it. So.